so close okay, to good. A show where Dominique Foxworth did not have the capability to speak into a microphone and transmit that sound, as horrible as it often is, out into the world, but he just slid under the blast door as it closed, Izzy, which is disappointing.
Most disappointing 1, 2, 3 I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So, hate to let you down. Make sure I get nice and close so you don't miss anything. I'm still setting up so you can make fun of me. Jamming.
Add a little spice to the menu today, by the way. The menu's looking a little spicy.
Is it?
I haven't even seen the menu because we're...
Literally spicy. Salt and pepper on that.
What's happening?
Okay, oh, first off...
I told you I'm still setting up. Yeah, sure.
You're still setting up, and also the other verb that you almost said. yes. Welcome to Debatable, a very fake television show, arguably no faker than it is today, that we do actually live, but also still debate nothing. That is Dominique Foxworth. He is in a studio that looks professional but has all the trappings of the opposite. And that is Israel Gutierrez in the Cayman Islands.
About 2 minutes ago, I had my finger in Pablo's mouth. That's how this take of the TV show is.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. We fixed it. Almost. Yeah.
Almost there. I enjoyed it, to be honest. Alabaster, where is this menu? What is on the menu that Izzy alluded to?
All right, we're going to run through some NBA playoffs tonight because we had interesting results from the Grizzlies, the Suns. We've got Harden and the Sixers playing tomorrow night. We have Trae Young and the Heat, and we're also going to discuss the NFL draft. But we are going to start with a series that has been insane. It's sort of like a basketball roller coaster, and that is the Grizzlies and the Wolves. And our question is, where do you stand with the Grizzlies after their performance last night?
So the
don't you owe an apology?
Yeah, no, Dominique, we're same mind here. Okay, because cool. The roller coaster metaphor he tried to roll out, you know, he's like, oh, look how topsy-turvy this is. What Alabaster did not also clarify is that he's the person just puking his guts out watching this after what he said yesterday. So this is what he said yesterday. This is sort of the stakes that makes what Ja Morant did that much more impressive. Alabaster pointed out that by year three, Dwayne Wade had won a championship, that guys who don't have a good jumper, small guards especially, slight guards, these guys who get to the paint and want to live there, that they struggle in the postseason. And Alabaster, I'm noticing they're not doing to put a card down that validates what I'm saying yet. But in fact, I refuse
to allow for producer interjection before at least all three of us speak. Alabaster, cool it.
So Izzy,
all I was gonna say was that I wanted you just to explore I wanted you to explore, Dominique, how Ja Morant was playing in the postseason. Exposition. Talking about the series.
So how do you feel about this, Izzy? How do you feel about what you saw last night?
Well, it's funny because Monday I was saying that maybe that all that, you know, physical play was getting to Ja Morant. It's possible I said it yesterday. I don't know what day of the week it is. And then, you know, he went and had that ending to the game, starting with that third quarter dunk. Can we just show like every angle of that dunk and like when he rises up, do it in slow motion with the cool TikTok music? Because this is like one of the greatest dunks I've ever seen in a playoff moment.
Anywhere. Like, this side of Vince Carter over Frederick Weiss is this. Like, it's
it had everything. The chest to chest, the cockback, the finish over top, and the guy falling backward where you could argue it was an offensive foul, but thank goodness they didn't call an offensive foul. That was absolutely brilliant. And that's the type of dunk where it's just like, you guys have been hitting me like crazy over the course of this series. Like the rainbow colors in my hair is like probably fading away because you're hitting it so much. And take that. And then take that fourth quarter and then take that game winner around whoever it was there protecting the rim. Vanderbilt, I believe. And it just shows you that this whole thing about, you know, the best player in a series kind of matters. And yeah, he played way better than Karl-Anthony Towns last night, especially down the stretch. And so, Ja seemed to have his sort of bounce back moment, which I'm pretty sure we all thought he was going to have.
Is it fair to cat the way we are? I mean, because I feel like he's getting made fun of again. And like shushing people. I mean, I don't know.
He had 28. He had 28 in this game.
He was fine.
He had 28. I mean, I don't know if we want to take. God, yeah. Okay, no, here we are. Just sitting in it now. Yeah. So to your point, Dominique, Karl Anthony Towns does do the thing. He's done this twice now in this series where the Wolves get up to a giant lead and he's feeling himself. And here for the podcast audience, he's doing the shh to the crowd. And then, of course, you end up choking away a lead and everything looks like, you know, real bad. But the
I don't think Karl Anthony Towns knows where he's going when it comes to his own like emotions or his own narrative, frankly, to a series, because like everything is like it's like a roller coaster. It's like, hey, my emotions are way up here, and then I do an interview, it's like I'm not nearly excited at all because there's so much more to do. And then
that's literally how his voice sounded in that interview with you. His voice was all a roller also a roller coaster.
I mean, it's pretty telling.
I want to get back to Ja Morant being great, but before we do that, I would like to point out how Kat is in the unfortunate place of being aware of his constantly changing narrative and trying his best to influence it, and that's a tough spot. That's a tough thing to carry because I think he heard the he plays soft thing, and then he attacks the rim. Then he heard us talking about how he was saying you can't come into Minnesota. And then he responds with the shush. And it just feels and he's also like given the exaggerated deep voice. Like all of that stuff feels incredibly uncomfortable. I just wanted to lay it on the table. Now, Ja Morant, 18 points in the fourth. Incredible. Way to go, Ja. I'm so sorry for the people who hate basketball and want to talk bad about you because you do amazing things.
The final 13 points of this game, you know, and he took over. Alabaster, there's no ambiguity here, right? Like, what Ja Morant did was as clear a repudiation of people who doubted his ability to take over a playoff game as you can imagine.
I mean, and the defense was also garbage at that point. Like, I think across to the final play of the Heat game, and you want to see, like, you know, everyone knows who's getting the ball, especially when he scored 11 of the team's last points. You know where the ball is going. They were unable to deny him the ball. And also, like, Anthony Edwards is lunging for the ball, for the steal.
That was bad.
With little to no time on the clock, and then he goes in the lane and finishes. Like, it's just really, really bad defense. Anthony Edwards admitting that he made a dumb mistake. And, I mean, you compare that with what the Heat did, where – Trae Young, like we all know who's going to get the ball. They didn't even let him touch it. And that's without...
Well, it's funny when it comes like everybody was sort of not everybody, but some people were sort of killing Charles Barkley to watch his final play. Or not the final play, but
so that's Anthony Edwards doing the thing where it's like, "Okay, touche, Anthony," and then he checks himself.
And then right behind. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so Charles Barkley said it was the dumbest team in basketball or whatever, but if they would have responded to that by, you know, smart game after smart game after smart game, then, you know, they could fight back. But they just keep making these mistakes and then admitting that there's these mistakes. But it just sort of goes to remind you how young, even Karl Anthony Towns, when it comes to playoff experience, how young this team actually is. And you guys mentioned Dwayne Wade in his third year winning a championship and all that. This reminds me of Dwayne Wade's playoff series his first year. His rookie year, when we weren't sure he was the guy. He had Lamar Odom, Caron Butler on his team. And they were playing the New Orleans Hornets, I think, with Baron Davis and... PJ Brown and Jamal Mashburn, and it was just back and forth, a bunch of teams that just had a lot of talent but didn't really know exactly what direction they were going, and the Miami Heat won it because they had home court advantage, and I think that's what's going to end up happening here. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if Minnesota has an emotional game six and comes back and turns this into seven, and then we can't really kill Karl Anthony Towns because he took his team to seven games in the first round against the two seed.
I fully agree, by the way, that this series is very much up in the air. Like, the end of this game, as much as Alabaster has pointed out via card here, that the Grizzlies have been dominating the Timberwolves in fourth quarters, the fact that we have a 3-2 series where dumb mistakes are happening everywhere because of the youth thing is what stuck out to me watching this game, because this game was messy as hell. Like, even the Grizzlies, Ja Morant's bricking shots,
series.
Like, until that fourth quarter, the whole series had been like this, where you're like, oh, this is what happens when you get a bunch of guys in their early 20s who are all sort of feeling themselves, and to Dominique's point, feeling our criticism of how much they're feeling themselves, and they're trying to prove a point on every possible play. And so for me, the idea that anything can happen when I watch these games... I can get the greatest dunk I've ever seen. I can get a psychological implosion. That's why I love this series so much. Not because it's beautiful, but because it can be incredibly ugly right after it's that work of art.
you could still get the greatest dunk you've ever seen still from a different player because Anthony Edwards is that talented and that athletic. And so go ahead, Charlie.
I was just going to say, I do think it's time. We're about 10 minutes in. Dominique, I can say it. Egg on my face. I shouldn't have questioned Ja Morant. And you were right to not be prisoners of the moment after four games. And with that
said, wait. Before you finish that, Charlie, let me stop you right there. Because in game four, I believe it was, like, Karl Anthony Towns had the same game that Ja just had. He had four field goals going into the fourth quarter and felt like he had, you know, more because he got to the free throw line. And then just had like four or five crazy shots in the fourth, carried his team to a win big time. But we weren't talking about him the same way with Ja. We were talking about, oh, he salvaged the situation because he had such a bad game. So we do have to, like, sort of level off the way we talk about Karl Anthony Towns because he has had his great moments to go along with his not so great moments.
Right. Yeah. And actually Kat was quite good in that game, even though Morant started making like all of his shots down the stretch. Like Kat did not deserve to be crushed for his performance last night. And like we have obviously taken shots at him in the past, but and the shush was hilarious, but he played well. I thought there was a pretty funny quote from Bob Vulgaris, who was on Bill Simmons' podcast. He described this series as looking like basketball on bath salts because there's just one-on-four threes, crazy dunks, blown leads. I almost think that's the perfect way to describe it.
Anthony Edwards is eating himself. I don't understand how that dude went from what appeared to be a non-contact right knee injury to just running back out there 15 minutes later. Guy had in game four had to be helped off the floor in game four, and you're thinking, oh no, this is going to be a disaster. And then boom, it's like a starfish just grew a whole new leg and came back out and hasn't really limped since. That I don't understand that kid.
Can I buy stock? Can we all buy stock as a show in Anthony Edwards trying to outdo Ja Morant's dunk? In the next game.
Yeah. I'd be willing to bet he's going to give it a go.
Chance that that's happening.
And yes. I mean, I was going to say, and he's going to fail, but actually, I'm not so sure. I guess the Grizz defense is such that maybe it'll be less likely to happen. But he has the athleticism and the capability to pull off. Well, I feel like nobody is quite Ja, but if somebody in the series could do it, it's Anthony.
Yeah, the gold standard before was my man's in Toronto. Just remember that? Oh, Lord. Just him. Yeah, I don't even want to.
Well, they do show this one video in the Grizzlies arena of, I'm sorry, in Minnesota's arena of Anthony Edwards dunking disgustingly over Gabe Vincent. What they failed to mention, however, it was an offensive foul call and it doesn't really count in the history of the NBA. But in that highlight, boy, gets the crowd amped.
Yeah. Yuta.
How dare you offensive foul call that? Anyway.
Yeah, no, it was a bad call.
Time to talk Heat.
Oh, God. Are we really? We're doing this on our
own? By that, he means Suns. He means Suns. Yeah. The Suns provide the Heat, so we're talking
about kicks and the testicles.
Can I ask one more follow-up question about the Grizzlies before we move on?
Please.
Which is basically, and I'm kicking the can forward a little bit, but they had a lot of metrics that put them ahead of the Warriors going into the postseason. And they've been so uneven. Do you think that they have a chance if they move on against a more established Warriors team? Or is this where youth runs out and they're sort of...
I have one question for you that's going to answer that. Okay. Who does Ja Morant cover?
Nobody.
Jordan Poole?
Yeah.
Like, whoever, like, they're going to hunt down whoever Ja Morant is defending and probably go nuts on it. Whether it be, you know, if he switches over to Clay, might be in the post or a whole lot of movement. If it's Steph, I mean, good luck with that. So we'll see, but I don't think he's got a shot.
At the risk of having a video clip thrown in my face, like we just threw all of yesterday's show back at Alabaster. Yeah, I concur with Izzy. I just love where the roller coaster is going. Don't think it ends with an NBA title this year.
Although, do you know if I told you the first two people who have hit seven or more threes in consecutive playoff games were Steph and Clay, that'd be obvious. Do you know who the third is?
I do not. But I have a sense.
Reggie Miller. No, they didn't shoot that much right then. Ray Allen. I don't know.
Desmond Bain. Bain.
Your boy.
Games three and four back to back.
Pablo does not know how to play this game. Pablo, like you don't know how to play this game.
You
just like that. Yeah, it's exactly.
Yeah, you got to guess wrong.
Page just
set it up and then act surprised when he nails it. Like, jeez, bad teammate.
That's on me. Dumb mistake. I did my mind. Decided I was going
to
do it.
Page's my favorite player in 2K to play with, by the way. Never misses a step back.
Meat sack talk? Like, yeah, now, we're doing
it's,
now?
It's time. All right, we'll move on. And the question I have for you guys is, did last night prove to you that the Suns can keep winning for a couple more weeks with Devin Booker out?
It's cute that you have this question for us, but we're not here to talk about this question.
I mean, it didn't prove it. Like, I think we all believed that it was possible. I don't think it I guess it just reaffirmed our belief that may have been teetering after a really embarrassing loss. But I think we all believed it was possible. But let's get to what we're really here to talk about.
Yeah, Mikal Bridges. Well,
real quick,
can
I make fun of? Yeah, I was going to say, didn't you used to think he was Miles Bridges' brother, Pablo? Didn't you say that on the show before?
I'm not here to talk about the past.
I think you might have said it was a twin as well.
I think they had to be twins if what I was saying were to make any sense.
Yeah, because they were drafted in the same draft. So, yeah, they'd have to be.
Its own roller coaster of a take was that.
I love it. That's good.
But do we have the video that we're really here to watch today? Oh, Chris Paul.
Oh, my goodness.
Chris Paul rising and firing from the left side.
Like, the precision in that suggests to me that that's a part of his practice routine. It's like,
well, yeah.
He puts it, like, that is a period in practice for him. Or when he's doing his off season with his special trainer, like the same way that Aaron Donald, like, is doing hand fights with knives.
That's right.
He's doing jump sack kicks.
Oh, no, Dominique, you know those, like, you see it sometimes in gyms and stuff. You have, like, just the torso of a person, and it's all just, like,
foam.
Chris Paul just has a groin, and it's elevated, and so he has to do those drills and just kick them over and over again.
Gosh.
But he lost the – like you said, he practices this, and I believe that. But this was, like, one of the poorest ones because he lost the subtlety in this one. This is the way you or me would do – you or I would do that. Like, it just goes straight up and goes straight to the groin. Like, come on. Like, he's got to get a little bit of knee action, maybe some shin in there, but just go straight foot to groin.
It's so precise.
I would say that the problem is – if we saw that and didn't know who did it, I could believe that was unintentional.
Yep.
The problem is his reputation. Yeah, the problem is his reputation. In the same way that I get annoyed with Pablo for always making the James Harden strip club joke. And then we find out that alas, James Harden is in a strip club, and I'm like, well, I can't defend him anymore. That's how I feel about Chris Paul. It's like we keep making since he was a sophomore in college, we pointed out that he is hitting people in the goods. And like, I think last week or maybe it was Monday, we were talking about him and it came up that that's something that he does. And they did it again.
Yeah.
And Draymond Green is out there saying, come on, Chris Paul. Like, come on.
But
way too obvious and it's too much.
So two things. Number one, the goods is the name of a strip club that James Harden loves. Number two, what we saw here, Izzy, to your point though, in terms of like, why does this one feel different? It's because he did it against Jose Alvarado. And Jose Alvarado, who is like, how old is he? He's like 21 or something crazy. He is so young. And he is the ghost of Christmas future in some sense for Chris.
Ghost is like, great because he's hiding all the time. You can't see him and he shows up out of nowhere. And then that's why he deserved, frankly, a kick in the junk as far as Chris Paul is concerned.
Sorry. Jose Alvarado, born in 1998, is 24 years old. But he is there. He is there to make Chris Paul feel ancient. And this is Chris Paul lashing out. Of course he was going to do this. If he's going to do it to
anybody.
But it's
not lashing out. That's the problem with Chris Paul for me is I spent enough time when I was at the PA. I spent a good amount of time around Chris Paul. Really love him. Anyone who talks about Chris Paul, really respect and like him. You watch the way he plays. It's so smart and calculated. Even somebody like me who does not understand the intricacies, I understand that he is doing this on another level. And we cannot just call it a lash out. This is calculated. The man who knows everything that's happening on the floor at all times, the man who is like, by all accounts, very smart and like empathetic, like kind off the court, reasonable guy, is not just having these like random lash outs that all like manifest in hitting someone in their reproductive organs. Like, I refuse to accept it. So you can call it what you want, but I'm gonna call it what it is. It's intentional and it's part of his game. The same way a crossover dribble or a pocket pass or a step back is a part
100%.
Of his game. This is a part of his game and he uses it just like any other part of his game.
And I'd like to know what podcast is going to ask the difficult question, right? Because I know J.J. Redick, when he was on his podcast, he asked him about, like, the rip-through move and why do you always do that if it's not really a basketball play? And he's just like, well, the defense is putting their hands out there, so if they're not being smart enough, why shouldn't I take advantage of it? What is he going to say when you ask him this? Unless he says it's an accident. If he's going to say, well, don't put your junk out there if you don't want me to kick it. Like, what is he going to say to this? Because this is obvious. Like, it's obvious over the course of decade plus.
You're going to have to evolve the ability to tuck your junk? Like, I don't understand. That is not.
I know some experts.
Come on. I mean, geez. That was such an obvious alley-oop. And then Pablo jumps up and tries to dunk it, too.
Yeah, I did. Can we get the card, though, Alabaster, that you put down? Because I just whiffed that alley-oop so bad about junk tucking.
I know.
So Chris Paul, yes, is in fact the only player in the league with 4 junk shots in his personal history. And it's remarkable. And so I guess the whole lash out thing, it's okay. I want to acknowledge that Dominique has a very good point there, right? When it's this precise, it can't be a lash out.
And it's always the same thing, too.
Right.
But like, it's almost kind of like when you're in an argument with someone and you're like, oh, you've been wanting to do this the whole time.
Yeah.
And they're just mad at the same time. And you're like, this feels like a lash out, but you've been planning this. Premeditated. Yes, there is mens rea here, to use the legal language. There is an intent. There is malice. It is planned. Absolutely.
Somebody study for the LSAT.
You think if we say that enough, the next time it happens, he might just flat out be ejected for it?
It's a great, like, you know, thank you for bringing that up. I just realized that, yeah, we don't really see him get ejected for this ever.
Can we get a replay? Because I'm pretty sure the officials are going to be like, ooh, yeah.
You
probably going to have the worst reaction they've ever had to a replay.
You can't, because, like, I don't think anyone even sees it as it's happening. And it's like, it's hard to eject him for it because he's become, like, the college one was the least sophisticated. Like, I want high
Julius
school
Hodge
tape.
Just.
I want high school tape. I want to see what it was before then, but that one was not sophisticated. They've gotten progressively more and more sophisticated. So, like, I think he is out. He's gamed the system. You might be able to find him afterwards, but that's the best you can do. And I think he's fine with that.
When they review it, Izzy, someone should challenge this and demand, like, an ejection. Yep, they should do the hand motion. The video that should be playing on the ref's television screen should be a montage with music of all of the times it's happened before.
Absolutely,
that should be prepared by the NBA
just,
officiating.
Just to let you know what it looks like, we kind of have had examples of this in the past.
Yeah, a couple times. Alabaster, did we sufficiently cover this?
I think we nailed
story.
That series.
Yeah, I mean, I think we gave the people what they want. I think we did. I will say, I think
next time we have to go back and talk about how that became his move of choice. We'll go sort of the origin story on that one. We got
making of a crotch puncher.
He has gotten more brazen with his retaliations. Like, Herb Jones boxed him out and knocked him over, and then 4 minutes later hit him in the face. Jose Alvarado picked his pocket in the backcourt.
He's
angrier. Very, very angry.
And no foul call on the Herb Jones retaliation either. That was a great little exchange.
Oh, actually,
yeah, he did. You're talking about when he tried to lay it up and he came with the big slash. But the point that it's 4 minutes later is, like, further to my point, is, like, these are not lash outs. This man is calculated. And he tried to help Herb up. Like, oh, gosh.
All right, guys, let's move on to Harden and the Sixers and do a little game of zoom in or zoom out, because I think the micro and the macro are pretty interesting about what's going to happen tomorrow night. And my question for you is, do you want to zoom in on the pressure James Harden is facing tomorrow, or zoom out on the state of the 76ers and the process moving forward?
I'd like to zoom out so far that we can't even see the planet Earth.
We'll come back to you. Izzy, zoom in for us. Zoom in for us, Izzy. And then I'll zoom in, and then we'll let Pablo's tears close out this topic.
Very good.
I dropped my phone.
Aw. So, do you have
I'm going to zoom in on James Harden here, yes, because, like, I not only is – okay, so it's the big picture, right? The MVP, the leading the league in scoring for multiple years, the super team that failed. Oh, now you're with, another MVP-level guy. Is your time up? Will you ever be that guy? Will people start to sort of rethink what you were back in Houston because of the offense and everything else? And all that's going to be in his head. The idea that he isn't even the player that he was back then is still going to be there. Like, what's going to happen, you know, years to come? Am I going to be a role-playing point guard? Am I going to be overpaid? Are people going to look at me? Are they not going to, you know, enjoy me as a team? Like, all that stuff's got to be going through James Harden's head. Not to mention, like, throwing a cherry on top. Like, you want to talk about Doc Rivers' pressure of, like, blowing a 3-0 lead. But James Harden throwing that on top of his resume in the playoffs, just not going to be great. Like, I don't know if he feels it. I honestly don't. I don't know if he's sort of, if there's any way where that shows outside of some missed shots. But, it's definitely a ton of pressure around James Harden for this series. Absolutely.
How could he not feel it, Dominique? Is there a person on this planet who could not feel the pressure if this is how your series has gone, that card?
Lots of people say that they don't listen to the outside noise, which is not true. Maybe it affects different people differently. But I would say that there's no chance, but it feels kind of like the way that James Harden has been responding to everything this season suggests that he actually doesn't know anybody's watching, and he actually doesn't know what anyone is saying, right? Because at
literally
every turn,
can't hear it from the
club. It feels that way because at every turn the pressure gets a little higher on him and the tension gets a little higher on him. Like, he needs to justify this trade, he needs to justify the extension that they're going to give him, and that's all before the playoffs even start. Then we get into playoffs and everyone's like, he has to be the answer to this. He's going to take the pressure off Embiid. And his response to that is not even like shooting poorly, which is part of it, but not shooting very much at all. And like, that to me is so confusing, in part because something I think I said yesterday is that James Harden, or players age, normally they age in front of our eyes physically before their mind catches up to the fact that they can't do it anymore. James Harden's not trying to do it. And that's the most confusing part. Like, maybe he's accepted a worse version of himself sooner than we have.
Yeah, I don't think it's that confusing in this particular instance. I think it's, don't blame me, I just got here. Like, this is MVP Joel Embiid's team. And I know he's not saying this out loud, but in the end, if they end up losing to the Raptors, if they lose in the second round where he gets swarmed and doesn't have a bunch of shot attempts, it's going to be like, I'm not the MVP this time. I was supposed to be a sidekick. His finger got hurt. He couldn't carry us. Maybe we'll try this again next year. And he'll just try to convince everybody involved that he could still be, I don't know, a 25-12 guy on this team the way they play. I don't think they can. I don't think those two really vibe that exact same way unless you just, you know, put Embiid in the corners and just let James go to work a lot of the time. And I don't think that's what Doc Rivers is going to do if Doc Rivers is even the coach here next season.
I personally like Dominique's theory that James Harden is dancing like nobody's watching. He's just living his life, man. He's not here to be judged. He doesn't care about that. I mean, if only that were a pathway to avoid the worst playoff collapse in the history of Doc Rivers' career, which is saying something because he has more playoff collapses, 3-1 leads blown, three of them. He is the Chris Paul nut puncher of blown leads in the NBA postseason. No one comes close to being as famed for doing a thing that is absolutely disgraceful.
Well, on that same note, I think Joel Embiid is the guy who gets nut punched the most in the postseason over the last few years. Like, he's got to look back and be like, man, that team that I had with Jimmy Butler and J.J. Redick and, you know, Tobias Harris and like and a good Ben Simmons who could hit 5 of 6 free throws in a game 7 on the road. Like, that one Kawhi Leonard shot absolutely wrecked them, because like, from there to last year's team, not nearly as good. This year's team, when you look at it, break it down, not nearly as good. And you remember how, I'm going to play a little game here. Do you remember how many shots Kawhi Leonard took in that game 7? Like, this wasn't the Raptors beating him.
All right, this was Kawhi Leonard taking his chance.
Yeah. 30.
35.
Dominique. 39. He took 39 shots, Kawhi Leonard did in that game. The 39th one being that little fadeaway. Unbelievable. One dude took
that. That was a bad pass, Pablo. That's not on us. That's not on us. That's a bad pass. That's a bad pass.
I'm going to take you behind the curtain on how I thought this was going to go. I thought I was going to say 30, and that would be way over.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. That was a bad pass. He set it up it was going to be low. It was a bad pass.
Look like a no look, but I was staring right at you, and you thought, I get it. My bad. But 39, they got beat by one guy. Like, they've got to be so angry about this. And now, with Embiid having a chance to be that guy, healthy, blah, blah, blah. Oh, crap, my thumb's broken. I can't be that guy anymore. Like, he's got to feel like he's getting in the junk every single playoffs.
He should. His thumb is torn. Like, all of this is bad for Joel Embiid. One note on the Doc Rivers end of things, because, and this is where I hate that I was sort of right about this, because it looked like it wasn't going to matter, because Dominique was laughing at me for making a big deal out of Matisse Thybulle not being able to play in Toronto. Now we're in Toronto for game six. The Sixers are apparently favored by 1.5. I don't know if anybody actually believes the Sixers are going to win this game. Again, I have war wounds in my leg. It's telling me that there's like a storm front coming. I don't believe that. But the fact is, Doc Rivers has had this lineup, right? All season. He has had, and this is regular season numbers to be clear, but nonetheless, the most dominant regular season lineup of anybody. And you know how many possessions that he's used that regular season lineup as the most dominant in the league?
This is our turn to guess.
This,
you go
this series,
first,
this series, how many possessions has the
possessions,
most
possessions, not minutes,
potent?
Possessions.
Oh, he's 45 possessions.
Ooh, I'm going another. I'm going three. Three possessions.
Okay, Izzy, you're blowing the game. The answer is 20. Come on.
What?
What? Thank you, Dominique.
What?
How did you not use that great lineup more often? That's absurd.
20 possessions. And now you don't even have Thybulle in Toronto, Alabaster. It's. I you know how I feel about this.
I feel forever, before Charlie goes, I will forever associate Matisse Thybulle for some reason, not for some reason, I'm about to explain to you, with Eminem, because as soon as I hear his name, I always think of, he only got one shot, and then I just keep going with the Eminem song. But anyway, go ahead.
It's a good joke.
It's not a good joke. I'm just saying, it's worth the interruption.
Can I offer a counter take on James Harden? And something I've been thinking about, and... You know, we're saying that he doesn't care and he plays like lackadaisically in the playoffs and stuff like that, doesn't care about the outside noise. I think he actually cares a ton. And I think he cared so much that last year in Brooklyn, he played through a severe hamstring injury. And I don't even think he's choking this year. I actually just think this is the new James Harden, who cannot blow by, you know, defender X, Y, and Z because he's at a different stage of his career.
But why can't he make an open shot either? Like, there are not even the most difficult of step backs that he's taking.
He's still injured.
The hamstring is never going to get better.
The injury thing. I mean, we just went through this with KD, right? We were theorizing. Is he hurt? KD says, I've never felt better. I own how bad I was.
That's a basketball playoff thing, right? Every year in the playoffs, anyone who doesn't play well is hurt.
When LeBron showed up with the cast?
With the wrist, I knew you were going to say that. Yeah. But it feels like every year, which is fine. I'm not saying it's not true, but you play a full schedule, you're going to have some bumps and bruises, but they only seem to pop up when a team is preparing for you for 7 games in a row. Then people's hammies start hurting and wrists start getting
sore. Because he only got the one vaccine shot. You get it, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. Gotta get two.
As someone who cares about the Sixers, I'd like to advise James Harden to roll up to this press conference after game six in a wheelchair and a full body cast.
Oh, full body cast. Absolutely. Legs out like this.
I heard we can
It really
get
wasn't
booster.
That serious, guys.
That's the word on the street. I can get another booster.
Oh, is it time?
I think.
I can get my 8G technology.
That'd think it was like after
one
four.
To go.
If you have 4 months after your booster. You can get
four. I thought
booster.
It was six.
Oh, is it six? Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe. I might be leading you guys astray.
Love me some boosters.
You guys want to talk about the NFL draft?
Get a booster.
Okay. Well, we're going to move on. I agree, but we'll move on. And we're going to do a couple rounds of take it or leave it. I'm going to give you guys a take. You guys can take it. You can leave it. And the first one is about the NFL draft. This is a historically weak quarterback draft class, according to the analysts. There's also a counter-narrative that there should always be quarterbacks taken high in the draft because of positional value. My take is that this class is so weak that no quarterback should go in the first round of this year's draft.
I mean, disagree, personally.
So you're leaving it.
I am leaving this take. I'm leaving this take, which is just an excuse for Alabaster to give us more takes. Did you guys catch that, how this game works? He just gives us takes now.
Well, I'm going to leave the take just because I can't get excited about offensive, defensive, interior defensive linemen, you know, middle linebackers in the late first round. Like, I'm not going to get excited about that. I don't care where these guys get drafted in terms of pressure. I just want to, you know, see it and experience it. And I'm not going to experience it in the third round because I'm not going to watch that part.
Well, but Dominique, hold on, right? If you're the Carolina Panthers right now and they're picking where, 6 or 7, mm-hmm, right? They have 6, right? You desperately need a quarterback, obviously. And if you just did the thing where you were like, all right, try to figure out who's going to be our savior, and Malik Willis just happens to be there, and maybe for very valid reasons, lots of people have skepticism around Malik Willis, right? He's not accurate, his decision-making is poor, the big arm is counterbalanced by all of his ability or lack thereof to actually make the plays that you need. But you're like, didn't everyone say that about Josh Allen?
Yeah.
I would be doing is lying to everybody if I'm running the Panthers. Yeah, this guy sucks. This guy sucks. And then I would take him immediately.
Well, you left out the 6-1 part, too. And, Malik Willis is an athlete, but he's not the athlete that Josh Allen was. So there's a bit of a floor when you have that type of athlete at quarterback that you can build something around it. The only reason why I would leave to take, because I generally like the take of passing on these pipe dream quarterbacks and not drafting them. But if you break down or you give a hard look at all the guys that are projected in the first round, there's a number of other guys that are going to go towards the end of the first round that I'm not sure are first round, or I wouldn't consider first round talent. And because of the positional value, your hope is one of these guys pans out. Because of positional value, I'd rather instill that hope in a quarterback than a defensive tackle. Because if you're right and it does, say it's the same percentage chance that this guy pans out and it's a D tackle, if it ain't Aaron Donald, then it wasn't worth it. And plenty of, over the years, we misevaluate guys all the time and have quarterbacks who go in the second, third, fourth, sixth round and turn out to be not that bad. So, I think I would leave the take because of that. But can I take over the take it or leave it and give you a take to see if you want to take it or leave it?
Can I just note that Pipe Dreams is an awesome name for a strip club that James Harden loves before you do that?
It's your favorite game.
That was also Kenny Pickett that gave you the thumbs up there.
So, Stingley should be the number one overall.
Mm.
He is by...
Explain about him, Dominique, because people may not know Derek Stingley.
Derek Stingley is a cornerback for LSU, and by most of the mock drafts and most of the big boards that are out there, he's not even the number one corner listed. Most people think that Ahmad Sauce Gardner of Cincinnati is the best corner. Obviously, I disagree with that, but the reason why Stingley is the number one is all the advanced stats kind of prove that the most impactful position on defense is cornerback. So if you can't have the most impactful position on the team and on offense as quarterback, the next spot you should look is on defense at quarterback or at cornerback. And Derek Stingley, as an 18-year-old true freshman, was the best cornerback in all of college football in the SEC. Cincinnati. He was playing in the SEC in practice, balling against guys who are currently the best receivers in football. Every single day and every single week he was playing against guys, or every other week at least, he was playing against guys that were going to be NFL players. And then he balls out against Alabama. They win a national championship as a true freshman. And he is the best player in all of cornerbacks in the country. And now maybe since you. Then, yes. And yeah, he's the best player at a university that knows how to recruit and develop defensive backs. And now he's had 2 back-to-back seasons where he hasn't played as well, in part because he hasn't gotten as much attention. But now there wasn't some big catastrophic injury or something that would explain away why he's lost his ability. He still has the ability. He just didn't do it as well over the time. I still think he's that guy. And nobody just walks into college that good off the bat. Very few people do. So why not get this, in my view, when I watch him play also, it's not just he got lucky. His ability to move his hands and feet simultaneously sounds
stupid.
Where's
he projected right now?
He's projected post 10, 11, 12 range. I'm not done doing very, very suggestive things in the name of Derek Stingley's talent.
Yeah, you're not done declaring that all advanced stats now declare cornerbacks the most valuable position in football? Okay, great. Go
clear out. not only does he have the ability to stay in front of people in press coverage and the speed to run with just about anybody and the quickness to stay with small receivers, when the ball is in the air, he attacks it, tracks it, and catches it as good as many receivers that are in this draft. There is no reason not to take him number one overall. I would consider
to be like a two-way player, like Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, probably not, given his family's history at receiver. I would think that he's not going to go play receiver. But all that aside, there is not as good as Aiden Hutchinson is, he's not like Myles Garrett. Like, he's not that guy. And same for Trayvon Walker. So all that is out there. Take it or leave it.
I left the first take behind. This one might be farther behind. I mean, look, I know that there's like the two positions to me where the crazy athletes stand out the most are cornerback and defensive tackle. And if you're telling me that this guy is that level of cornerback, then I'm down. But I don't think you've sold too many people, especially since
I have a follow up question before I decide whether to take or leave this take, because I've heard like Joe Burrow call him the best true freshman he's ever seen. I just want to get a sense of like what it means to be a prodigy at cornerback and why that's something that sort of projects out. Like, what does it mean that you're precocious at this position? What does it suggest about how you may be years and years down the line?
Listen. You don't need to project it. He was NFL ready at 18. If he doesn't get any better, he will be one of the best cornerbacks in football. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And in that system, so Cincinnati played a lot less man than they do at LSU. LSU is one of those schools where they don't do a whole lot of scheming. They put you out there, and then people scheme against you and see if they can beat you. Like, they say single high man like 70% of the snaps at LSU. And he was going out there without help against – you know how there's a parade of Alabama first-round receivers? He was strapping them at eight damn team.
Baby.
yes, baby included. I wasn't there the whole time. I just watched the film, so who knows what's happening. At eight damn team. So I could understand.
I'll take it.
Not in isolation. I could understand if there was someone else in this draft. If there was a quarterback who gave me even the inkling that he could be a franchise quarterback, yeah, I'm with you. If there's a defensive player that is just – out there doing Aaron Donald type things regularly. All right, let's talk about it. So, but that guy ain't there.
So I'm going to take this take, Dominique, but can you guess why I'm going to take this take?
Because you love me?
Because 8 Damn Teen is also the name of a strip club that James Harden.
No.
Okay, we're going to move on.
I really hate you, Pablo. I really hate you.
Oh, man.
Free business ideas is what I do.
Dominique, I love your take, and I wish I had taken it. Also, because there are the stories of him shutting down Jamar Chase in practice, and we just saw that guy run through the entire NFL.
My biggest problem with the take is that University of Florida is clearly DBU.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Charlie Alabaster, there's not only stories about it. There's footage of it.
Yeah.
Go ahead and do a quick search and watch him D up Jamar Chase in college.
Okay, so we have 3 minutes.
Maybe.
And we're actually trying to do the heat, but we have 3 minutes to do it. All right, take it or leave it. Trae Young's playoff struggles this year against the Heat won't stick to him because the Heat's defense is just that good.
You're going to have to leave that. We're going to have to leave that right here because – I mean, what superstar gets that level of you know, slack? Nobody. Like, you just can't say their defense was so good, so that's why you had that level of performance, a 2-for-11 here, a 1-for-12 here. Like, that is not superstar numbers. Like, yesterday you could see his plan was, and this is without Jimmy Butler on the floor, his plan was, let me see if I can make a couple of these deep ones so they have to jump out at me, and then I can get into the lane. And he missed the deep ones, and he couldn't do anything else, and he was absolutely checked out by the end of that game. Max Strus made him pick up his dribble like 35 feet from the basket. It was absolutely not the type of performance you should see from a superstar. Nothing like we saw last year in the playoffs. And so, yeah, if you want to credit the Heat defense, that's great. But last night, they didn't have Jimmy Butler, man. And
or Kyle
that
Lowry,
was a lot,
for the record.
Or Kyle Lowry. And so there's no reason he should skate.
Pablo, we only got a little bit of time left, so I'm assuming that at some point you want to throw to a video, right? Would be my guess. No?
Is there, not do we got a Jimmy video? Butler? We videos?
Do we have Jimmy Butler?
Ooh. Wait, do we have
You didn't see Jimmy Butler on the sideline? Do we?
Yeah.
We don't have it.
Yeah.
Wait, can you
I imagine this is what Dominique Foxworth was doing when he was watching videos of Stingley Jr. Defend as he was a freshman, because he was just giving you the pelvic thrust right after Max made a three, just like he was giving you the face, and it was like it was Jimmy Butler saying, "Here's another meme for y'all," and it was A1.
Yo, if Derek Stingley Jr. can turn quarterbacks into what Trae Young looked like, trying that three at the end, hitting it off the side of the backboard, then yes, we should be praising all the people involved for their talents here. Yeah, no, I look, I joked about this last year, right? Like, Matisse Thybulle and
there it is.
Oh, hold on, here it is.
Here it comes.
Thank you.
Bang. Juice went bang, man. And he went triple bang.
Caron Butler loved it. Somebody else tried to like protect the screen from it. It was just an incredible moment in the game.
Stat though, Jimmy Butler and Trae Young have the same. So Trae Young is 7-for-38, Dominique. Jimmy Butler is 7-for-16.
While we have 20 seconds left, can we just have Alabaster crinkle that up and eat that? Because he was talking so much trash about Jimmy Butler shooting before the playoffs started. Like, just eat it, man. Because that is absolutely the perfect stat to throw up on the screen.
If he eats it now, what is the percentage that you would have to eat it in the next series?
Against the Sixers or the Raptors? Because I think it's a higher percentage against the Raptors that I would have to eat it. Yeah.
I just was wondering if he goes 23% and you're going to have a snack or not.
If Jimmy Butler goes 20, like he was never supposed to be a 3-point shooter. I feel like he's good for the rest of the playoffs. Like if he hits one more three for the rest of the playoffs, he's set.
What? Hold on. You just talked about giving slack to superstars, and you're telling me that Jimmy Butler can go 1 for 1,000, and that'll be totally
No. Make one more. If you would have gone over under on how many threes Jimmy Butler would make in a playoff run, you said 7.5. It's a pretty good number. He did that in the, he went slightly under, but did that in the first round.
I just want to institute a punishment where we all have to eat paper for our takes. We should be forced to do that.
No, we shouldn't. That's a terrible idea. Whose side are you on?
I'm on the side of somebody who believes that all of his takes are going to be validated.
I need more strip club names.